You are listening to High Energy Listening. We're a comedic podcast where we talk about some things and hot topics.
Hot topic issues.
And this week we have a guest. And going forward, we're going to have a guest.
Finally, at long last.
I'm gonna let Eric take over because he brought our guest on.
Okay.
That's a sweet intro.
Our special guest today is actor Sean Clear from Odd Mom Out. Among many other things, he's been in The Affair, Madam Secretary, Happy-ish. Most recently, it is all right. And yes, but most recently, Odd Mom Out, which is finished their
awesome show.
Yeah, it's a very funny show that finished its first season this past Monday. So, welcome, Sean.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me, and I am honored to be the first guest on the show.
Now, is the first
dreams
guest,
are coming true.
I hope Eric told you about the buy-ins.
Right. So a percentage of next season's proceeds, if we have a second season of Odd Mom Out, will go to you guys.
Yes. Great, perfect. Got I'm it. Glad you explained it, Eric.
Yeah, and I've signed in blood. Perfect.
Blood's the only signature we take.
That's the only,
No ink. Can we talk about how you guys know each other?
Oh,
yeah.
Right,
Let's hear it. You left that out of the intro.
Okay, yes. I met Sean in my acting class. The acting teacher is James Villemaire. Shout out to James Villemaire. He still does an acting class, so if for some reason, you're
is
looking
it a good
for
acting
one,
class?
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
It's a solid acting class.
It's a solid acting
obviously.
Class.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Eric
he's
and
a
good Sean guy. Have come out of it. Come on. Two success stories sitting across from us.
And he does coaching too. Like if you have an audition that you want coaching on,
there's private coaching.
And we did an actual showcase together. We were not in the same scene.
We weren't in the same scene. No, but
we were in the same showcase.
We were.
Details, please. Were these monologues? Were these two person scenes?
They were scenes.
Dramatic?
They were scenes. Sketches. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, comedy
scenes. Yeah.
From what?
Written by him.
By our acting coach.
Yeah.
In a sense,
yeah, he would just write.
Correct.
He just would use his acting class to see if his writing was any good.
And in was it? Were these sketches?
They were fun. Yeah, they were all funny. They were all funny. Yeah.
Do you remember specific details? Like what you guys, what the sketches were?
Remember.
I do remember. Yeah. I played on one occasion a man who was convinced everyone was missing out on the phenomena that is lambskin condoms.
Yeah, that's right.
And
if you
haven't tried lambskin condom, apparently you're missing out. I did actually after that try to purchase a lambskin condom because I was curious, and then they're like $15 for two, and I thought, no, I'm not doing that.
Wait,
you didn't do it just for research, though? Because
no.
Like it'd be tax deductible.
It actually could have been.
It's really made of lamb skin. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Actually, anything that's encased in skin has variable contents. It's like a hot dog is not actually anything you might think it is. So who knows? It could be anything.
I think lamb skin condoms, aren't they made out of intestine?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's actually not skin. That's lamb innard condoms, which doesn't have the same ring to it, but we should talk to their marketing
people.
Well,
wasn't the whole punchline that like they're not really protection or something? Is that what it is?
I don't remember.
It's like, you're trying to tell a coworker.
I was telling a coworker
how good lambskin.
Yeah,
are.
How they're like the greatest things ever.
Yeah.
But I think they still have a use. Like it's not just like people will wear a lambskin condom. Because, we have a question
here.
Yes, I know the answer to this.
Oh. What?
Which is that lambskin condoms stop the permeability on them, will stop sperm from going through, but they will not stop the virus that causes HIV.
Ooh.
Oh.
Wow.
It's a little
that's
intense.
Very good. Wait, but the latex ones will?
Yes.
Okay.
Both.
Got it. Well, the first question, though, is why does Sarah know that?
Okay.
Which I think is worth exploring.
I learned this in sixth grade math.
Okay.
In math class.
Right. I had a terrible, terrible math teacher in sixth grade. It was right before I got pulled out of public school and placed in a Catholic school. This guy yelled a lot about AIDS.
Yelled.
And yes. There was often yelling. We received a lot of information. Wow. And also I learned facts like a burger and fries, when you eat them together, it's part of the American food complex.
Really?
That they can't be digested at the same time. And that's why you feel so full.
That's
wait,
crazy.
What? That, yeah, why so can't,
that might, this fact might not be true then about lambskin condoms, guys.
Well, I'm going to take it as fact because it's still more sex ed than I was ever taught in Kentucky. Yeah. So...
Yes. Oh, right.
And it's a teacher, too. So, obviously, they were telling the truth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, young minds.
Actually, no, he didn't teach us that. He was telling us that all condoms let AIDS through. And then I think somebody else clarified. No, I think somebody...
Sixth grade student.
I think eventually somebody was like...
Okay. He knew.
Our math teacher is letting things go all awry. We need to get some sex ed into these sixth graders before they all just have sex without condoms, because why the heck not? Wow.
That's why you teach abstinence. Just teach abstinence. It
can
works.
Can you tell us about abstinence education?
No, I'm kidding. I rough on Kentucky. I fortunately am from a school that had wonderful sexual education.
Okay.
And I have been very healthy since, with a few minor exceptions. And
aside from that,
Kentucky in general has a bad rap, and it's worth ripping on a little bit. We're the home of the Creationism Museum.
Whoa.
Which is really interesting.
Wow.
It's a very loose interpretation of the word museum. Like, I think if you look in...
Is it one room?
No, it's surprisingly many rooms of made-up content. Okay. It's the complete and unabridged history of everything that never happened, which is which is amazing.
Okay, sure.
Just concept for a museum. So that if you go on
family event,
but
or just you yourself recently when you went down for the holidays or something.
I was just like, I'd like to learn something.
Let me just stop in.
I'd like to confuse all the good knowledge I have with unsourced knowledge. They have a free day on Christmas Eve, and that's the only time my family could be like, we can stomach this. Let's go. So we went, and it's an absolute riot. It's the funniest and most backwards place in the world. It's really great.
So wait, what does the Creation Museum think of then Christmas? So there's probably obviously not Santa there. It's like Jesus only.
They didn't. I didn't see anything about Christmas necessarily because I think that they are so confused about what is mythology, what is real, and what might be just like magic, that they probably don't want to even traverse the Christmas territory. They're like, we can't come up with a scientific explanation for Santa. Let's just let that be myth. Let's just let that be folklore. Yeah, but they will say that, for example, Noah brought baby dinosaurs onto the ark, and that's how the dinosaurs got there. That's it. Yeah, that's what they teach.
Are there baby dinosaurs on display?
Yeah, little tiny. Like it's amazing. Two baby dinosaurs.
Yeah. Wow, that must have been just a rough journey.
A rough boat.
For him.
Because could the baby dinosaurs have eaten the other animals?
They
would think.
Especially the T-Rex.
There were early cages.
Well, go to the museum, and you'll see that they had cages. There was even a really pragmatic system for taking care of animal feces and droppings. It's actually there. You can actually learn about
that.
Very
detailed.
No, there was like the cages had like a grated floor, and you could pull the tray out underneath the floor.
That's kind of like a bunny cage.
Yeah, it's like a rabbit cage.
Mini T-Rexes.
For tons of animals. Yeah. If he brought two of every animals, what did he feed the animals who ate other animals?
Unicorns.
That's where
they
all... Right, that's good.
That's why there's no unicorn.
That's why there's no unicorn.
But unicorn meat can be divided to feed a multitude of people forever and ever.
True.
Like the fishes
and
the loaves.
Did they get into the nitty gritty of what they fed them and the feeding schedule?
So by that point in my tour, I feel like my eyes glazed over, and I started to have these really intense migraines, and I was crying tears of pain
physical
for humanity. And so I didn't read the plaques from a certain point forward, though I'm sure that is explained. The one thing I did do was jump into the Adam and Eve exhibit to see if they had genitals, they didn't behind
really?
The leaves. Yeah, they're just
you
big Barbie dolls.
Yeah,
and I almost got kicked out of the museum,
Whoa.
But it was so worth it. The thing is, they probably knew some kid would look for genitals, and they didn't want to offend a good Christian kid by showing him fake genitals.
What if instead they just gave Adam and Eve huge bushes? So like under their leaves, like they were just like full on.
Yeah.
Because
then they knew Wolf of Wall Street.
That would have been pretty good. Yeah, they should have done that.
You should consult the museum.
I mean, all in all, that would be one of the least ridiculous things at the museum. 15 feet from Adam and Eve was a like velociraptor of sorts.
Wow.
And then on the other side was a like a wild boar, because they all lived together. And there's this like wild boar. I don't know why they picked those two animals. But the wild boar had this like Mo from the Three Stooges bowl cut.
Whoa.
It had like bangs like covering half of its eyes. It was like very cartoonish and weird.
That's weird.
It stands out.
Very strange.
Very strange. I derailed us with this conversation.
No. This is pretty much where our podcast goes.
I love my home state. Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I love my home state. But there's a faction that doesn't understand how the world works.
Sure. So are you prepping for the end of the world?
Well, 2012 came, and that's really when I woke up, you know, because I realized that God had lied to me my whole life.
Right.
And I just decided that... you know, I maybe actually want to live for a little bit longer than 2012. So in 2017, yeah, it's all going to end. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that the new thing, 2017?
No, I just made that up. But they got...
You heard it first.
You heard it first.
The world is ending in 2017.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, depending what date, 2 years from now, less than 2 years? Do you have an exact date?
7/17/17. Well, it doesn't have to have
my
like
birthday
doesn't
is
have
July
to be.
10, so I'll just squeeze in one last birthday right before the end.
Perfect. You know what? You should drink to have a hangover for days, because then you can go to the end of days.
I have a friend whose parents were convinced that the end of the world was going to be the 12th of December 2012,
mm-hmm.
and they're extremely religious, extremely Christian, in a obviously a fanatical sort of way, even though he's a lovely guy and they're lovely people.
Mm-hmm.
But he's since separated from that system. But he told me how bizarre it was for that day to come. And with complete conviction, their family hunkered down and was like prepared for it. He, of course, was like, this is crazy. But when you grow up in that, you know, it's kind of hard to separate yourself from the ideology.
Wow.
And of course, the day came and went.
His
mom had like a complete breakdown.
Well,
her life was changed.
Did any like weird confessions come out or any weird interactions thinking that...
Oh, that's it.
Like just let everything all out. Yeah.
Yikes.
Like knowing, thinking it was the end. Like did anything get real uncomfortable and awkward?
I accidentally ran over the cat in the driveway.
It was me. I've been lying the whole time. Honestly, why not? Why wouldn't they? But I don't understand why they weren't, you know, all just having like raucous sex or something. Like have some fun before you go. But then again, they're Christian. So I think
Christian.
They were just ready. Yeah, you know, you can tell how Christian, not Christian I am.
Do you know, did they have like specific thoughts about how the world was going to end that day? Like, did they think they were going to be
like,
ascended that day? Or did they think it was going to like dissolve? Do you know if they had
meteor.
A specific?
I'm not sure. I think they thought mass catastrophe and mass disruption. And then I assume, you know, traditional stories of like Armageddon that involve the chosen ascending, but we didn't get into too many details about that.
Guys, I had a thought. You know, everybody's talking about zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
For a while,
everybody
was like, "You're gonna be my zombie apocalypse survival team."
Okay.
Mm-hmm. My thought of preparation for the zombie apocalypse is get some. Gosh, I sound like such a druggie today. But was to get some ecstasy and take ecstasy and then just run into the zombie horde. Because the thing seems to be like in zombie apocalypse, most everybody dies.
Yes.
So
right.
If I'm going to die, I might as well like really enjoy it. Like enjoy the dying and then become a zombie.
Will you enjoy it though? Like
I think if you're
on
if you're high enough, then,
I mean they're actually they're eating all of your flesh.
Are you really eating?
I mean,
she makes a valid point.
Down.
Yeah,
they are
eating your flesh.
All
of your flesh. I mean, as much as that, as long as they're hungry, and I don't presume zombies get full.
Is it? Because like in the shows, it's like you get like one tiny bite by a zombie, and then you're a zombie.
That's the big hole in zombie plots.
Well, because it's like, supposed to be a virus,
well,
right?
Well, think about it.
The
like,
virus makes them.
If a zombie...
A zombie.
If a zombie if a zombie eats you, how are you going to turn into a zombie? So eventually zombies run out of food source because they don't eat each other.
Right.
So how do more zombies happen? You get bit, you turn into a zombie, or you get bit, you if you get beat, you're going to get eaten. It's not like they're like, I'll have one bite, you were fine, enjoy zombiehood. They eat the whole of you, right? So the zombie thing's unsustainable.
Valid point.
Like Shakers.
Valid point. I think it's like if they ever bit you when you got away. I think that's how you turn into a zombie.
But how many? How did many people turn into zombies then? Like, everybody is a zombie. Right. There's like there's millions of zombies.
You watch The Walking Dead, there's like a
well, like
sea
that one little girl, like, got bit, and then they found her, like, roaming around with the zombies.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert from, like, season one or two.
Oh my god, I was on season two!
That little girl
and I wanted to know what happened to the little girl!
She's lost! They think
they're
lost.
Looking
they
for
her.
Her. Damn it!
There's a shed!
Damn it!
They put her in the shed with the other zombies.
Wait,
I got to the part where they were in, they found evidence of her in a cabin. They were like, we're close.
Well,
and then I didn't get any farther. Oh, she's zombie.
Spoiler alert.
Does the mom find out? You know what? That's beside the point.
I mean, they all find out.
Beside the point.
Beside the point.
But actually, if we want to get back to the...
back to, like,
wait,
a traditional interview.
Or,
Eric was
in a different one?
A different sketch.
And you each only in one sketch. Do you want to elaborate on
my
your sketch?
My sketch was the partner, he was, like, talking about, like, some girls, we were supposed to be at a party and some girls looking at him at the party. Do you remember that one?
Yeah,
and then, like,
vaguely.
He's saying something about a white wine spritzer. Like, he drinks wine spritzers.
Oh, yeah.
But no, but then I was ridiculing him for having it. But
a
I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember what the punchline for
it was.
It was like,
because it's emasculine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of.
I beg to differ, but go on. I think
Meg is super macho, guys. Meg
drink.
Knows macho drinks when it comes to it.
I just think. Drink what you like.
You're right.
It's a delicious drink. So the punchline was that it was a girly drink.
But no, no, there was more to it than that. I can't remember it, though. It was something like that. I cannot remember.
I don't remember.
But then also,
it was just kind of like that.
Do you remember that, too? I think I had, like, a weird... Maybe it was near, like St. Patrick's Day? Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
St. Patrick's Day? And, like, I had, like, a weird... Because, like... He wrote this one sketch where we're all at the party and there was like awkward.
It was like the wrap up sketch.
And there was like silence in parts of it and not scripted stuff. So I came into the party and made some weird comment about I love this time of year because of Shamrock McFlurries or something. But it got a laugh. Like the audience.
I remember
laughed.
That.
I yelled it.
I remember
it was,
that.
So like.
You fully committed to that line.
Yes,
that's why it was funny,
it.
Because
and
otherwise
yes,
no one would have believed
yes,
it.
Yes, and everyone, like, laughed.
It required full commitment.
Yes, full commitment. It got a laugh.
Okay.
But yeah, as far as the punchline for that sketch, I do not remember what it was.
Something about St. Patrick's Day and Shamrock Shakes.
Yeah, Jamesville Mayor, if you're listening to the podcast,
please let
bust
us know.
Bust out the sketch. I know you have it. Please comment on the Facebook what the punchline was. He's my friend on Facebook. It could happen. I told him about the podcast.
Well,
before.
Yeah, so I think we've gotten both punchlines from your sketches.
Yes.
Were there any awkward dramatic or comedic monologue moments?
Some
any
people
scene
had
study
monologues.
Moments
some people
that,
had monologues.
But
I don't. I remember everybody doing a great job.
Yeah, everyone did a great job.
Yeah, it was
a
fun.
Good,
it was a fun little showcase. Yeah,
it was fun. Was
for
it
sure.
Really hot then or no?
Yeah. Well, no. It was cold outside, but hot in the theater.
Oh,
that's what it was.
Reasonably warm St. Patrick's.
No, because of the heating,
the indoor,
right? Is that what it was?
Yeah, there was just like
scorching.
It was
in there?
Scorching in there. I remember that.
It was fun.
It was fun. It was a great time.
Yeah, great time.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
I haven't seen that guy in forever. Miss him.
Okay, I feel like Eric wants to take this.
But,
take it from here.
But, you know, we should talk about, let's talk about Odd Mom Out. Funny
what?
Show.
Yeah.
Bravo half-hour comedy. Just wrapped up first season.
Scripted. It stresses scripted
yes,
at the
yes.
start of every episode.
Thank God.
Oh, it's not, so it's not a reality show.
I avoided reality. Yeah, just barely.
So that's not you. Actually,
you're not actually
running
super
around
rich.
The Upper East
I'm side. Not actually super rich.
Guys, let's go.
I am just as much of a douche, unfortunately. That.
Your character is kind of like a fun. How would you describe it? Like
he's,
a fun.
He's an archetypal douche, but the difference is he's magnanimous. He's like a happy douche. He's
happy
like
douche.
So
yes.
giving with his money. I mean, not in like a altruistic way, but more in that he very much delights in being rich and being able to show that off. which makes him
giving.
Yeah, it's giving, and he has redeeming qualities for certain. Like, hopefully, he's a likable douche.
Yes, I think hopefully. He is.
And your character,
maybe not.
On the likability scale,
I'd say he's very likable.
I would say so too. Yeah.
Are you guys just saying that?
No. No.
You could be just saying that.
No.
You know, I'll be honest. I could be just saying that because there were some scenes. This is odd to say because you're sitting right here. But there was. I found him a likable douche. And then there was a scene where your brother or brother-in-law comes in to talk to you, and you're like working out with your trainer. And I'm like, oh, look at that. This show really is made for ladies. Like, you're just working out shirtless on the show. Like,
oh, did Sarah just call you eye candy?
Uh-oh.
Apropos of nothing, just.
And I was like, wow, they really are working this angle. So, like, you're a likable douche who's also in excellent shape. And it's like, oh, look at this look at this fantastic eye candy in the middle of this enjoyable character.
Well, I don't think we mentioned, obviously, for people, who have not seen it, Sean plays Lex on the show.
These monsters who haven't seen On My
Mouth.
But
actually, if you have not seen it and you have cable, watch it on demand. Watch it on demand.
BravoTV.com.
Yeah, BravoTV.com.
Uh-huh.
Hulu has it.
Hulu has it.
Yeah.
Well, do they have it yet? I think they're going to have it. Do
it
they
is
have
not
it?
On Hulu as of last week.
Not, but they might have it on Hulu soon. I can't verify that yet, but they should. They should.
And if you're a New York working actor, you should be watching it because it shoots here in New York City.
It does. And hopefully we will be coming back for another season, though we don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
We'll find out within a week.
Do you really?
Oh, within a week?
Within the week, yes.
Okay. What was your shooting season last year?
We were September through early December.
Okay,
last season, yeah.
Cool. Can you, because, I mean, obviously, we're actors and other people who are actors listen to this too. Can you explain the audition process? Or just, how many people you had to audition for, like, for that? Because obviously, that's a cast member on a show, So, I mean, it's probably a pretty involved process of auditioning for, like, the director, the producer, all that.
I can't even begin to explain how simple and easy and lucky it was.
Oh, nice.
I really can't.
Really?
I mean...
Okay, well, explain.
I don't know why, but... I went in for the first audition and was that workout scene, funny enough.
Really?
Yeah, that was the audition scene.
Okay.
So I did the first one and I thought I did fine. You know how you come out and sometimes you're like, I think I did well, but I'm not sure. And you can't really tell. Felt that way and I didn't hear for a month. And I had written it off, and usually as soon as it's over, I write it off. But then they called me back, like a month had passed and they called me back. Anyhow, so I came back, second audition. Same scene. They didn't give me additional material.
Who was in the room?
It was not just the casting director, but the two showrunners and Jill Kargman, who is the lead in the show, of course, and the some of Bravo's higher-ups were a part of the casting room, too, as I recall, but I was so nervous, I don't even remember. And I came in, and I just did that scene again, and then they kind of got in and grilled me a little bit. They were like, all right, can we see it this way? Can we see it that way? I must have done the scene 5 or 6 times.
Do you feel like you were making substantial changes each time?
Yeah, well, they, not substantial, because I feel like I always want to stick with, it depends on the direction. Like, I really went for it the first time. They were like, all right, can we see something, like, can you make them a little less douchey, a little friendlier?
Mm-hmm.
And
no,
so, yeah,
say,
like,
how
by
did
degrees.
They tweak, like...
We had a joke in the audition room.
Okay,
I was like, so, if I'm a 7 on the douche dial, where do you want him? Because he's a douche. And they were like, let's move him to a 5. And then I was like, all right. So the next one I did a 5. And the next one they were like, all the way to 10. Have fun. Knock, the socks off. But, so it didn't feel like they wanted me to reinvent it. It just felt like they wanted me to tweak. And I really do want to show that I can do just a tick one way or the other. Rather than I'm at, a 10 or I'm at a 0. You always want to show something so different. But I think it's really unique to show something that is so catered to the note.
Yeah,
that they see the note being taken without thinking everything's completely changed.
Sure.
So I tried to do that. Sure. I guess, maybe that was one of the few times I've been successful at.
Great.
But then after that, another month went by and then I got the news. So it was 2 auditions.
Wow.
For a series
time,
regular,
right?
That it was already
like
picked up.
By?
Yeah, there was no test. There was no, it was already picked
it
up
was
the series.
Picked up.
Okay. Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, like
amazing.
How lucky,
that's
how
amazing.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah,
really, really
amazing.
Lucky.
Yeah.
So, I'm fortunate in a million ways, and that was just another one of them.
What was your favorite episode to film in the series?
Oh man. Well, the last one.
This has spoilers.
Oh,
this
I don't think spoilers. I've seen the last
one. Actually, I haven't
either.
Has
it come out the last one? Ten is the last one.
It was on Monday.
I just saw nine. Okay.
This past Monday.
God, well, no, I spoiled Walking Dead. I deserve it. You spoil it right now.
Spoiler alert.
Well, I don't want to ruin it.
No, it's okay.
But
okay,
other
I'll
people
watch
watching
it.
Listening to this episode, listening to this podcast might not have seen the season fully.
So
yet.
I'm not going to, I won't spoil it, but I do get this nice, I'll just say it, I have a mullet in this episode.
Wow.
I won't
cool.
say why. I think okay. that's a cliffhanger that make
cool.
people want to watch.
Cool.
And there was just all kinds of room to improvise, and okay. We had some fun extending scenes, and they kept it in, and that's makes me really happy.
Oh, so they cool. let you guys improvise?
A whole lot, actually. I remember
the
first
lines?
Little
oh, cool.
bit of time I came in, I was like very tentative because you think with, especially with half hour comedy, it's all about getting the words right. And that's
yeah.
really true in sitcoms. And I think I wanted to do that, but then I also had so many ideas. So I would do a few takes by the book and then I'd try a few takes and go a little bit further. And each time nobody ever reprimanded me. So I just kind of felt like I had more license to go a little bit further and a little bit further. And by the end of the season, I felt like I could really play around, do with whatever I wanted on any given take. And everybody
oh, wow.
was really open to that.
That's
it seemed
great.
Like, you know, I'm sure that and sometimes in the editing room, they were like, God damn it. But
how are we gonna put
but
this
it was,
together?
They were just those kinds of people. Like that was how wonderful the environment was to work in because they gave you such license and such freedom. It was great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, do you come from a comedy background at all, or?
I do. Yeah, I did all stand up and improv and sketch comedy for like the first 4 years I was in the city. So acting came after that. It was always something I did, like in high school.
Where did you study improv when you came?
UCB.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
Did UCB through their advanced study and then ran my own stand up shows and whatnot, and then that I started to get some tiny little acting opportunities, and it occurred to me that I could move faster in that world than I could in comedy.
Yeah.
Comedy is really, really difficult. And that's saying something because acting is really, really difficult. So, you know, this seemed just like it was might have been more available to me.
Okay.
How did you, can you talk about how you moved from doing comedy to where you are in acting now?
I started, people would, when I did comedy, people would say you should act too.
Mm-hmm.
And I always at first said, no, I don't want to do that because I wanted to be Jon Stewart so bad. I still do a lot of political stuff, but I...
Don't
like,
give up that dream.
Well, he's
keep
retiring now,
on.
Right? So,
yeah,
no,
good timing.
Like, you just want to say something with your work and you want those words to be yours, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what comedy offered me. But at the same time, I was decent. I was getting better. And it did get me enough attention to be to start going out on auditions and whatnot. But it was... It just didn't feel like I was going to like blow up in that in any way, shape, or form.
Were you working a day job at that point?
Yeah, I was waiting tables and bartending and doing that whole gig,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's a grind. I did a few comedy sketches, one of which was a video where I gave Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech all over the city.
I watched it.
Did you see that?
I saw that on your reel.
Yeah. And it's just me giving that speech in like... In the subway,
yeah.
in a subway restaurant, in Victoria's
yeah.
Secret, in Starbucks,
yeah.
like all over on the Brooklyn Bridge. And that video got on HuffPo and went out a little bit. And then an agent reached out to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Agent reached out to you. Wow.
Which is crazy, an
that
assistant
is,
agent.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we did another video. I sent it to him and he said, okay, well, let me just try to send you out. So in a stroke of luck, somebody happened to see that work and then happened to offer. In another stroke of luck, rather, I'm a man. I'm also white and I'm straight. I'm not terrible looking. And I think that, like, unfortunately, in this industry, those things carry vastly more weight than how talented you are and a lot of other stuff. So, like, I've had a lot of luck.
Okay.
But that's kind of how it started.
Luck.
Yeah.
Sure.
How
but
it started transitioning.
You've also been working towards it. It's not as though
yeah.
you were bartending
sure.
and somebody came in and they said, "How would you like to be an odd mom out?"
That's actually a pretty good story. Let's just go with that one. How bad would that piss everyone off?
All right, I'll put that together. It's like with bartending.
And then I odd mom out. Just cut it together.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
chop.
It'll be really
use
abrupt
the,
like
yeah,
that too.
Right. Yeah,
use the,
yeah, exactly.
It was really
natural.
Easy.
It
line.
Was easy. Yeah, right.
You said it already perfectly, so we'll just chop that bit.
Yeah,
good. Perfect. Done.
Is there any thing upcoming you're working on, film or stand up or political humor related stuff?
Well, some of our comedy is around the corner. So my brother and I started a production company and we used to do a bunch of comedy just volunteer wise for this organization called represent.us, represent us.
Okay.
They're a nonpartisan anti-corruption reform movement. So money and politics, campaign finance, lobbying, and lobbying, revolving door, McCutcheon and Citizens United decisions. And so last fall, we ran a candidate for Senate in Kentucky, which at the time was the most expensive Senate race in U.S. history, Mitch McConnell versus Allison Lundergan Grimes. And we've made this fake candidate who was just honest. So instead of campaigning like a normal candidate, he'd be like, hey, I'm raising money because that's like what you need to do to get elected. You're all fucked, you know, but please vote for me. And we just made like honest campaign commercials.
Sure.
And it got a lot of momentum. We raised $120,000. Shepard Fairey made the Obama Hope poster. He made a poster with our candidate. We got on Al Jazeera and Time.com, USA Today. We were on Fox and Friends and the Today Show. And then we ran this candidate with a bus plastered with his face on it all over Kentucky and got some decent press. So we've built we're cataloging a few commercials that we've just shot. And we're going to run him for president starting in September.
Awesome.
So to hopefully make a mockery of the system and all the cash that's flowing into it, especially this election cycle, is going to be really grotesque.
Okay.
So that's around the corner for
us. That's around the corner. Keep an eye out for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
How is that stuff going to be going up? How can we look for that?
So that will be on, if you want to go to represent.us, that's the site of the organization that's got this really great plan to reform. A lot of organizations are trying to do this without much success, but they have a and I don't know if this is boring as all hell, we don't have to get into it, but they have a really great concrete plan. You can go to that website, or Honest Gill is the candidate.
honestgill.com.
Is Honest Gill a real person?
He's an actor. Actor is by the name of Frank Ridley, that we've done a bunch of stuff before, and he's like this big gregarious senatorial looking man in his 50s. He's perfect, and he's hilarious to watch.
Are you still doing stand-up?
I haven't done stand-up in a little bit. And it's so funny because stand-up is like a muscle you have to keep working. Mm-hmm. If you're not out every night, not every night, but if you're not out doing it a lot before you've reached a certain level and you're just kind of a pro at it, you lose it. It just, the muscle atrophies. And I haven't done it since November. Okay. So I want to,
when you were doing stand-up, did you actually have an agent booking you for stand-up, or you had to set up all your other stuff?
I was setting it all up. Okay. Yeah, it was, you know, nights and weekends at bars and clubs and wherever, and you know, you're doing a lot of open mics, you meet a lot of people, you run a show, you trade spots with them on their shows, and got a few club spots here and then, but I didn't, you know, breach that level where you have an agent plugging you in.
Got it. And a lot of that stuff is also like with what, like Gotham or some of the other ones that kind of like pay to play in a way.
Yeah, they got, like, you know,
really difficult to
bringers,
do.
Like bring five. Yeah.
Bringers. I did some of those when I was first starting out. I did some of those, and it requires you to ask a lot of your friends. And it's like you just feel like you're hustling people that you care about to get your career started. It's an awful feeling. But there's the way comedy clubs make money is, it's not a very sustainable model, and they're struggling right now because stand-up is not extremely popular. And also, you can go to any like nice spot in Brooklyn and see an indie show that's just as funny as the one where you have to buy two drinks and the door admission and all that. So,
have you ever been, speaking of indie comedy, this is kind of on the subject, it was hilarious. So it was something called the Macaulay Culkin Show. It's like a comedy show once a month that is at a venue called Shea Stadium in Williamsburg. Obviously, it's not Shea Stadium. But it's I used to, because that venue has been there a long time. And I got like, when Shea Stadium was around even. And so it was like confusing, because it was like, I remember like, I was like playing in some bands, and there was some band that was on the bill, and it said Shea Stadium. I was like, what? I was like, how did this band get to play Shea Stadium? That doesn't make sense.
That's awesome.
How the hell could that be? Because it's like the same exact name. But no, it's like a really funny, like indie. I feel like it has an element of sketch and stand up. Stand up comics, and it was really like sharp. People were really good, cutting edge. The sketch stuff was funny. It was a really good show. I recommend it. It was $5. It's once at the end of the month. If you see it, check it out. It was very worthwhile.
I got to check that out. I would love to see that.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Was Macaulay Culkin there?
No, I don't know why they call it that. He's not there. It's just called the Macaulay Culkin Show, but he is not there. And occasionally they will get, like, secret guests. No, they get,
no,
like...
specifically. Like, well, if we hold out long enough, only Macaulay Culkin
yeah. He'll do an hour-long comedy set, probably.
But you guys know he does dance parties, right? You go to the Macaulay Culkin's iPod dance party.
Really?
Where he spins just shuffle. He hits shuffle on his iPod, basically, and you have a dance party.
Wow.
That's a real thing?
That's a real thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know if this is a spoiler. I didn't sign an NDA, though, but he's been on the Jim Gaffigan Show, like, a bunch of times, apparently. Oh, wow. Like, they just have him popping up places.
Really?
Like, they turn around and there's Macaulay Culkin doing something.
Weird. That's amazing how his celebrity has persevered through, like, 20 years of darkness.
I mean, but those Home Alone movies, come on, guys.
I was so excited to see him that day. I was like,
oh, my God, Macaulay Culkin's here?
Yeah, like, those movies hold up.
He could have.
I agree.
Right.
I watch Home Alone, like, every year when it comes out around Christmas on TV, I'm like, oh, I'll watch it.
He could have a career. I mean, he could have, like, does he not want to act? I feel like he could easily.
I mean, he was acting on
some things.
On Jim Gaffigan. Yeah.
And then he has his band. Velvet Underground cover band, but they change the lyrics about pizza. It's called Pizza Underground.
That's what Macaulay Culkin does? That's crazy.
Isn't it called Velvet Pizza? Come on!
He lives right around here, too.
He lives near me? No, I got
Yeah, you live near Macaulay.
I feel like I'd be best friends with this guy.
I was just gonna say
he sounds awesome. If Haley Joel Osment could have, like, a pretty decent career at this point, Macaulay Culkin can.
Yeah, yes, definitely. I'd say even more so.
Way more so.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm not a huge Haley Joel Osment fan.
Me neither.
Whoa, Sarah.
He went downhill after The Sixth Sense. He really did. He peaked early.
Can I go to the banal New York questions?
Sure.
Okay, cool. So you've lived in New York for 7 years.
Six now.
6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You lived in this current location, which we're going to publish the address of.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the Papa Smurf mural on the street?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea what that is.
Can you say that?
I wish I could take credit for it.
Yeah, it just seemed like, I mean, I hate to say why, because it was just...
Well, there'll be a picture of the Papa Smurf. There's
a
picture of the Papa Smurf graffiti to go up on our page.
If anyone wants to know where I live, just look for the Papa Smurf mural and then knock on the doors across the street.
Oh, you're
really easy to stalk.
No, it's located not on your street, but a couple, many streets
many,
away.
Many
streets.
Guys, no one cares. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Okay, no, but so where did you live before you lived here?
I was on, I was in South Williamsburg.
Where in South Williamsburg?
South 2nd and Havemeyer,
uh-huh.
Right on that corner. And that was really fun. I was, you know, it's actually interesting. That block was being gentrified as I moved in. You always think of Williamsburg as completely gentrified, but South 2nd was known as the Deuce, and it was very Puerto Rican and very Dominican, mm-hmm. and very lively and full of that culture, and now... has a couple of coffee shops and like a Van Leeuwen's ice cream or whatever.
Urban but Outfitters? Is there an Urban down there?
Well, I'm sure soon, you know.
American
but
apparel. Right?
There we go.
American apparel.
All the yard sales are now those clothes. Yeah. So, yeah, close enough.
But so you live there. How long were you there for?
4 years.
Yeah.
And before that, I was in Long Island City. That was the formative home experience because it gave me 20 minutes of stand-up comedy.
Right.
I moved to this little apartment on the second floor. And right outside the window was the courthouse square stop on the 7 train.
Oh, wow.
So, like, you know, nice underhand soft toss. I could hit the train, and it would come around this corner and, like, screech and come to a stop. My room was the size of a moon bounce. I just had my bed in it. So it was a moon bounce. It was the size of my queen-size mattress.
Okay.
I hung all the clothes on, like, a rod over my head, and when the train would come in, it would shake the room, and I would, like... wake up with my clothes all over me because they would fall off. Yeah, and I would, when I was asleep, I would have dreams. I remember a specific dream wherein somebody was like, I was talking to somebody in my dream and they go, Sean, a crowded train is no excuse for an inappropriate touch. I was like, what? What are you talking about? And they were like, it's no excuse for an inappropriate touch. And I would like wake up and hear the end of that announcement and hear the train go off.
Wow.
And I was like, you go,
close.
It's permeating my dreams.
Yikes.
Then we had a rat infestation. Yeah,
it was
yikes.
It was like a, you know, real New York horrendous apartment.
Sure.
Were you playing at the creek in the cave at that point at all?
I would, yeah.
There?
That was like my workout spot. You know, I would go there a bunch and try and figure out. I had so many bad like nights there when I first started. I remember one bomb was so awful. I had bombed so hard. I was off stage for a month just like taking cold showers and scrubbing my skin.
They didn't want you to come back?
No, I was welcome back because they don't care. They do not care. They know.
Well, I bombed a lot of improv shows there.
I've definitely bombed an improv show.
We do like these weird 10-minute things. So then we were like, I don't know, let's just do a montage. And we'd all just like freak out and do awkward scenes and then like try to edit them and be like, let's pretend. Pretend this is a callback to something.
Performers walk into the creek in the cave.
A lot of awkward shows there. Not in a while though.
It can really like smell.
I was forbidden to go back there.
The shame in people's performing souls
for more than a month. And they're forbidden.
Like, do not let Meg back
perform.
In the club.
Not as a guest. I can't even be an audience member.
You can't be an audience member.
They won't have you back.
They have a restraining order against you.
Because of bad improv. Yeah.
It's like a wall of pictures of people who can't come in. They're instead like, of famous people.
Yes. It's a signed headshot.
My face would definitely be on there.
A signed headshot, yeah.
That place is like such a formative workout area for comedians now. Everybody is doing comedy there.
Yeah.
It's really built itself up.
I had a lovely night where we had a terrible show there, and then I was walking back across the bridge there.
Yeah.
What's that bridge? Monsignor Magorlick Bridge? We all know this. The bridge that connects Greenpoint.
No. Why did I say that? That's the one that goes to Staten Island.
Very close.
That's the one that goes to Staten Island. Damn it. Is this going to kill me?
I know what you mean.
It goes across to McGinnis Boulevard.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it doesn't matter.
Do you want me to Google this?
Guys, if we don't get this, please comment on our Facebook while the name of the bridge.
Too far away.
I was walking across the bridge with my friend Pete, who came to my comedy show because he's a good friend and lived in the neighborhood. And as we were cresting the bridge, we could see deep into Greenpoint to whatever the D Street is, because the streets in Greenpoint go alphabetical up at the top. And over on that far D Street, where now there is a men's homeless shelter, there was a car gloriously engulfed in flames, just like burning with no one around, burning and burning. Wow. And we looked at each other. It was like, wow, we really live in New York, huh?
That's the true New York experience.
Car on fire, abandoned. How long ago was that? That must have been a while ago. Because that area is so nice.
It wasn't originally. It was probably like 6 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah.
6 years ago.
It was before that.
It was rougher.
Now there's a men's homeless shelter there, so you got to think of how rough it must have been before.
They would not even send homeless people there. It was too dangerous.
Yeah, that was when they burned cars there.
Yeah.
But 6 years of transformation in New York is two decades anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's crazy.
Right. Everything is, you're right. You get priced out everywhere.
Pulaski.
Everywhere. Pulaski Bridge.
The Pulaski Bridge.
Good job.
Wow. Oh, thank God. Thank God.
Good. Let's see. Getting back to some acting stuff, I wonder, you had a role on Happy-ish. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little about that? You played Mikhail.
Yeah, it's spelled funny, but it's actually just Michael. And that's sort of, it's telling of the writer's sensibility, because I actually walked into the reading and I was like,
it's like
I'm playing
Russian name.
Yeah. I was saying Mikhail, M-I-K-A-L.
Yeah.
And I went into the reading for my character. You're obviously nervous with all the other actors there and the producers there. And I was like, yeah, I'm Mikhail. They're like, who are you playing?
Did you prepare?
I didn't
an
know.
Accent?
I would have never have known.
Did you prepare a wonderful accent to go?
A Russian
accent. No,
I am Mikhail.
Hello.
I didn't know.
Hello,
I had no idea that it was so didn't know, because I never say my own character's name. Nobody else says my character's name, and it's spelled that way. So I just went into the reading not knowing the name of my own character.
Wow.
Which was embarrassing.
Do you want the accent or you don't want the accent?
No accent? Okay.
They're like, no Russian accent? Okay. I have that prepared as well.
Can you imagine being the casting director for that? Somebody comes in and they're like, so do you want a heavy accent for this or not? And you're like, for Michael? Play it how you see it.
Well, the spelling is the Russian spelling of it. It's like Mikhail Gorbachev or something.
I don't know if
it is.
Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't. Crazy. There's something. The writer is so specific, and he knows exactly what he wants.
Okay.
And I feel like it was, if you knew him, when I knew him, it made sense to me. And he's a brilliant guy. That show was canceled. It's not coming back, unfortunately. But it's a testament to the show that it's like it really tries to push boundaries and do some new things on television, and obviously it has varying degrees of success in doing those things, but I really immensely respect the people who made it because of the risk that they were willing to take to make something different.
Sure.
So.
Sure.
And that was here, or
yeah,
LA?
That's filmed here.
That was here.
Here, yeah, we shot one episode in LA, but the rest of it was here, and most of it Steiner.
Originally supposed to be Philip Seymour Hoffman.
It was, yeah. In fact, they shot a full pilot with Philip Seymour Hoffman, and you know, of course, after the tragedy, hard to bounce back a whole show from that. But they believed so firmly in that show. Yeah. And the writing was so interesting. Steve Coogan was like really willing to hop on board, apparently.
And your role in the show was reoccurring. Were you a cast member?
Honestly? No, I was recurring. I was in 7 episodes of 10.
Okay.
And Michael just sort of like hangs out and says some snarky things in most episodes. And every once in a while, he's like, he's an ad in the ad world, and he's like a disgruntled copywriter. And every once in a while, he's pitching something that he definitely doesn't believe in like a snarky way.
Okay.
So he's kind of like a hipster.
Sure.
Different flavor of douche. I'm always
your typecast douche type.
Are you
I have a douche face.
Your collar? Is that...
Well, no, but Lex probably would pop his collar. Michael was more of like a wearing Velvet Underground t-shirts and like shitty necklaces kind of like I don't care douche, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you been, as your agent sent you out to LA to test for any other pilots or shows or anything else you can talk about? Or...
Well, at the moment, it's back to auditioning. You know, it's Happy-ish was canceled, and Odd Mom Out will hear in the next week. And fingers crossed we get
that.
To everybody,
yes.
Please. Fingers
yes,
crossed.
That's the
fingers
sound.
Crossed. And everyone crossing their fingers.
Yeah, that is the sound of fingers crossing.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. I've had, you know, a nice little run of auditions, but you just don't know. So it's fun to like jump in. You get some work and you think that it all keeps rolling, and then you kind of realize that could have been it, you know, and that's the world and that's
it's really unpredictable.
Do you know what you'd do if that was it? This is too much of a downer question.
No, not at all, because I don't think that the point is to this may sound counterintuitive, but I'm really trying to divest myself from the idea that the point is to gain further notoriety and to build myself as a you know, an acting brand, you know, because I think acting is a trap. It's like doing drugs, wherein you get that one thing and you get a high, you get a rush from it, and it makes you so happy and it's really exciting. And then if you don't get that again, and if you don't do something more interesting than that, if you just level out there, that no longer becomes all that interesting to you, and you have to keep going further and further, and you feed off of this sense that you're important in the acting world, or that you're recognized, or that people think that you're somebody. And that's a trap. And it's easy to say that, like, it's easy to say that having done a little bit of work, because I've been extremely happy and proud of it. But I know that path doesn't necessarily make me the happiest. And if I can just enjoy the work that I'm doing and really try to spend whatever minimal talents I have in doing something good for the world, hopefully through Represent Us and some of the other nonprofits we're doing videos for, then I'm really happy. Then I can really, really be happy. And that's, it's a little bit of a pipe dream, because I know I'm going to want more in the acting world, but it's a matter of like kind of controlling that and observing that interesting urge of mine to gain more notoriety and to be a bigger and better actor. Because I think even though that I want that, and you know, I very expressly want that, it's not going to make me all that happy. So I don't know, did that answer the question?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, follow up though. Do you, because you obviously, if you're doing stand up, do you focus on writing at all? Like writing your own stuff?
Yeah. So yeah.
Scripted.
Yeah.
Scripted, as and they call it on Bravo.
That, thank God.
Sketches.
I've written a lot of reality and it hasn't gone, it's not all that interesting.
So hard.
The all the stuff I do with my brother, I'm heavily involved in the writing. And then the next step would be for me, if I could create a show or make a film myself. And that's obviously requires a whole lot more than what I'm capable of at the moment, but that's a dream for sure. That's a dream.
To do a TV show or a movie, sure.
Yeah, about something that matters to me and something I think
awesome.
The world needs to hear about.
Sure.
And
That's cool.
That's a dream.
Well, yeah. If it comes to it, I know a lot of crew people. Some DPs, some camera people, some sound people, yeah. People with lighting packages.
Okay. Most importantly, they're willing to work for free. That's great. That's great. Thank God. Thank yeah. God. Because we have no money.
This has been really, really fun, you know? Talking, catching up.
First guest. I'm honored. Yes.
First guest.
I peed here first. Nobody else
yes.
can be a guest on this show and pee here.
Nobody else can. You know, we're not going to bring that many other people over to pee at your apartment.
Oh, right. We did shoot this at my apartment.
Yes. Shoot, record.
Which is across the street from the Papa Smurf place.
Third floor. We're not going to come back here to record other people at your apartment. I thought that was part of
No, they can, so long as they don't piss. That's why I said that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. My door is open. You have a copy of my key across from the Smurf place, exact address, and here's my social security number.
The key is hidden under the third leaf.
Right.
Under the mat.
The third leaf. That's actually big enough that people might not find it.
Cool. Yeah, well, you know, you have that one mannequin out there just like Adam, one just like Eve, and one just like a pterodactyl. Pterodactyl.
A pterodactyl.
A pterodactyl.
It's not a silent P. It's
we should
not
make a Zombities versus pterodactyl movie.
That would be a sci-fi that's pretty good. Yeah.
Zombity versus pterodactyl.
Versus pterodactyl.
I like that.
Oh, amazing pitch. Yes. One final follow-up question. Have you met Andy Cohen?
Have you been on? No, I have not. I am but hoping to be the bartender.
Close that door.
Please, no. I would love to do that.
Yeah.
I'm sure, though, probably, you know, next season, boom. They'll have the whole cast on his show or a couple casts.
I would on it. Freaking great. Love that. That Andy Cohen's the man.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to High Energy Listening.
Yes.
I'm Sarah Ruth Blake.
Meg Scanlon.
And I am Eric Risk.
I'm Sean Clare.
Yes. So tune in next time, and we will have another special guest. Which will be determined.
Well, or it could be Sean again. The second
Hell.
Episode.
Maybe.
We basically, yeah.
Maybe just keep coming back. Maybe I'm just a part of the podcast, and you never wanted me to be a guest in the first place.
We decided
that we weren't going to have guests before. It could be decided again.
By the way, guys, if Macaulay Culkin is listening, and you want to drop by, could Macaulay come over to your apartment and hang out?
Macaulay, look for the Smurfs. I'm right across the street.
Look for the Smurfs, and you can be a guest on the podcast.
Macaulay, think about changing your...
Or a host.
Think about changing your band to Pizza Underground. No, I'm sorry, Velvet Pizza.
Velvet Pizza.
It's Pizza Underground.
It's Pizza Underground, but I feel like Velvet Pizza just rolls off the tongue better.
It has a better ring to it.
Yeah.
Velvet Pizza.
Sounds like
it
a cooking
it
show.
It does, yeah. Pizza
like
Underground.
A cooking show.
I like Underground Pizza. That's just me.
I kind of liked Velvet Pizza.
All right, until next time, signing off. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.